Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford.
I'm Charlotte Metcalf, and my guest today is Christine Darwood, an organisational psychologist and executive coach spanning sectors as diverse as retail, textiles, engineering, agriculture and mental health. But what we're really here to talk about today is her new book, 96 Hours, which is published today. As many of you will know, recently and tragically, Christine has become well known as the widow of Shahzada Darwood and mother of 19-year-old Suleiman Darwood, who both died in June 2023 when the Titan, a submersible diving to investigate the Titanic, imploded, killing all five people on board. 96 Hours is about the events leading up to and following the terrible accident. Christine, a very warm welcome to Radio Oldie.
Thank you.
Now, one of the things that moved me very much about the book was that while it was a minute-by-minute account of the events leading up to the disaster, it was interspersed with vignettes from your very happy marriage and family life, which actually gave the story a really harrowing context and really underscored what an unimaginable loss this was for you. So before I ask you to relive any of those terrible events again, can we start with how and when you met your husband?
How and when? Oh, yeah. That was in summer 2000, and we were at the same university. And
Where was that?
In Reutlingen in Germany. And we were in the same student accommodation. And I saw him from across... We went to a barbecue together, and I didn't understand most of the stuff people were saying because my English at that point was very, very poor.
Why were they speaking English if you were in Germany?
Because it was international students.
Ah, okay.
So it was a barbecue with all international students from all over Europe. So the common language was always English. And he just went out, and I thought, this person looks attractive, and therefore I followed him out and tried to have a conversation. Didn't quite work, but I sort of was smitten from the first...
Love at first sight.
More or less, yes. And, well, we spent some more time together because we were living so close together and, yes, fell in love.
But very, very, very extremely different cultures. How did that...
You mean how was the culture shock going
how
there?
Was the well, for you and also his parents and your parents, because West European culture and Northern Pakistani culture are pretty different.
So, yes, my dad met Shahzada while he was still in Germany, and he told my mum that, you know, that she's going to marry him, right? And so my mother freaked a little bit, but my dad knew. And so his parents were, obviously, I was not necessarily in the beginning the preferred choice for their son, but that all went away very, very quickly. My mum loved Shahzada, and my mum-in-law and I, we have like a very, very close relationship till now. We talk almost every day. We at least like twice a week we talk, and she is just very, very loving, and our relationship has been very good.
Amazing. So where did you go and live and start your family again?
So we lived in Lahore. So Lahore is, even though there are 8 million people, so arguably it's not a small city, right? But it feels very small. It's still very family-oriented. At that time, it changed now, but at that time it was very green. You had a lot of really old trees. Yeah, it was lovely. The people are wonderful. I still have all my friendships there. Like, some of my best friends are still from that time. And beautiful people, like lovely people with golden hearts. And it's just, well, my heart is in Lahore.
Who first got interested in diving in the Titanic?
No, I found the ad, and then I showed it to my husband, and he was excited.
Why did you know before he was interested in the Titanic?
Well, yes and no. I mean, when you're married for so long, you know what the things that, you know, excite your partner and whatnot. So it wasn't necessarily Titanic specific. It was just the possibility to do something unusual.
Have you ever gone diving with him?
No.
Gosh, interesting.
Never. We are the glampers of explorers. Like, we like our clean bathrooms and, you know, we need fresh water and good food. No. We can't do tents and no. That wasn't us at all.
But up till that moment, he hadn't really shown any interest in the Titanic or anything like that.
Oh, no, so like, he was fascinated by it like a lot of other people. I mean, one of his favorite movies was the old Titanic movie, you know, the black and white one. So that, and then when we lived in Singapore, there was the 100-year exhibition.
You
know, 100 years.
The anniversary.
Anniversary exhibition. Was it, 2012, right? And then we went and saw the... It was a very well-done exhibition. And it was really well-done. Yeah. As in, like, what exhibitions is concerned, it's one of the best exhibitions done. And therefore, the children were also really excited because they had, like, even a cabin where, like, the passenger, how they would live, you know, the wooden beds and how they would... and then even clothes and everything. And so therefore... Suleiman was very.
So you saw that, and then many years later, several years later, answered the ad.
No, I didn't answer the ad.
I didn't answer it.
So I showed it to my husband, and he's like, find out if that, because I thought it's fake. Really diving down there, like I said, that must be fake, right? He's like, find out. So I called our travel agent, and they did their research, and they came back that yeah, it's a real thing.
You were originally going to go, weren't you? Not your son. And then only five people went down. And when you saw it for the first time, did you have doubts, or did you expect it to look like that? Did you expect it to look so small?
Well, I've seen all the online thing and, you know, so, yeah. You have the owner who builds the thing.
Yes.
Then you have someone from the Navy, from the French Navy, who was down there for 37 times. I mean...
Yeah. What could possibly go wrong?
No, I mean, why would I doubt that? Because they were very comfortable going on that thing. I mean, why would they risk their lives if they think that it wouldn't be safe, right?
One of the things I found most... was moving about this book as well, was your incredible emotional honesty about saying that all constant questioning yourself, could I have done it differently? It's all the choices we make in life, isn't it? Because you chose to step back because Suleiman was so excited about going. And the way you described that and how you got through it was, I just found that very, very moving indeed. Yeah. So this book, it's only coming out today, so for our listeners who haven't read it, it really is a minute-by-minute account of what happened next, and it's so harrowing and so frustrating what you went through, because the Coast Guard seemed to be just one delay after another.
It was very frustrating. It was very frustrating. And the communication was really bad, and... everything just took so long. So now I obviously now, from hindsight, I obviously know that the distances made it really difficult. But there was also a lot of political, inside politics that were playing at that point, right? But from that point on the ship, I was just like, why are they not here yet?
And you had your daughter with you. Almost.
So I like to keep her out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For her protection.
Yeah, of course. How long did it take you to write it?
So the writing wasn't actually the problem or the challenge. The writing was more cathartic. It was like, because I also obviously had a therapist who helps me, a grief counsellor, and they all recommend journaling. So the writing itself wasn't the problem. It was the polishing. So my way of journaling was often I would go on a walk and I dictated into my phone. So not even writing, I would dictate it. I basically would like talk to myself. I talk to the phone, right? So it's like getting your thoughts out.
Yeah.
And so I'm a very early morning person. So thankfully, people were usually not there. So I would basically dictate it and so get that feeling, getting that grief, getting my thoughts out of it. And that was really helpful for me to get it all out. But basically, I ended up with these, like, I don't know, 200,000 words of garbage, like rumbling, right? Mm-hmm. At that point, I'm like, I wasn't even sure if I should, you know, the publishing was not even on the table at that point. It was just for me. And then I don't know how somebody just said, well, you should publish your story. And I'm like, well, I have the story here, right? So what do I do with this now? And then going back, finding a structure, how I want to do it, finding also what do I want to tell, right?
Yes.
Is it just about, okay, because at that point it was just rumbling how I felt on the ship. But that's obviously not, like, really interesting for people. So
well, yes, it was, because it's everybody's worst nightmare, and for you to describe it in such harrowing detail, it was an incredible read.
Well, see, that's the thing, like, when people also ask me, like, or give a compliment about it, like, I'm still not sure how to take that, because
no.
It's like,
I can see from your face.
Yeah, because it's like, if I would have written a fictional story,
yes,
like anything,
yes,
you know, then I say, okay, this is my work, because this, I just thought about this, and I'm proud of that work, right?
No, yeah.
But it's like, I don't know, like, am I proud of it? I don't know how to feel about it. Am I excited? Yes, no, I don't know. So,
did anyone help you shape it?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Which publisher did you go to first?
Well, I had an agent. They went to the traditional publishers. I didn't like their feedback.
What sort of feedback were they giving you?
Like, nobody's going to be interested.
What?
Nobody's going to be interested, and no, it's not a good story. And I'm like,
I'm really surprised.
And I'm like, you know what? I think that is my way of, that I have to do that myself.
Yeah.
That, and now also in hindsight, I'm just like really happy I did that, because that way I have all the rights
yes,
are with me. I had all the decision power, like with the cover, with how it looks like, all that was all my decision. So I was in full control how my book is going to look like, what is it going to be, and nobody could tell me otherwise, because I'm self-publishing. And I think in hindsight, this was really important to me before everything else was out of my control.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting my voice out, or my boy's voice out, the way I want it.
Mm.
And not like somebody thinks they should be.
And at what point did you decide to intersperse it with your lovely own story about your family?
Well, fairly quickly, when I decided that, okay, I should put it into a manuscript. Because so many people saw them just as the victims of that, right? But I wanted them to get to know the humans behind,
yes,
that story, not just as a name and a victim, because they were human beings. They had their lives, they had their stories.
Incredible curiosity, didn't they? But this kind of mischievous, adventurous, I mean, almost naughty curiosity. They're pushing the boundaries all the time.
Yes.
Like, oh, where can we take this even further?
Curiosity, yes, absolutely. Mm. Wanting to do, but we still were very, like, we needed our comfort zone. So, would we go into the furthest cave? Yeah, if somebody first goes and then we follow, that we would do. But we were very happy to follow somebody. We would never go anywhere without a guide, ever. Like, no, because we wanted somebody who knows how to handle any situation. And but the curiosity of, yes, we would go to Antarctica and, you know, like things like that, maybe a bit out there, as in like different for a lot of people, but all in a way like you know, never in a crazy way, because no, because we didn't have the desire to find something new. Like, we just were interested in something, and then we found somebody who knew about it,
yeah.
And then we would want to learn.
Yeah.
Our motivation was to learn,
yeah,
rather than to explore.
The other really moving part of the book is how amazing his family was.
Still are. I didn't have a relationship with the family just because of my husband. I had a relationship with them because I really loved them. So even now, I really love them because they are just really amazing people. And, yeah.
So you've done a lot since with your... Tell us about your walk.
My walk, yes. Oh, God. Suleiman, because he was studying in Glasgow, one day he had this idea, because walking was our thing. He would often come with me to walk the dog. Like, he would stay, typical teenagers, right? I mean, he would stay up all night. So by the time, I'm an early morning person, so he would stay up until I get up, then walk with me the dog, and then he would go to sleep. So teenagers, right? I'm like, oh. So the walk, therefore, it was our thing. And at some point, because my family, they were mountaineers, right? I mean, growing up in Bavaria in the mountains, walking and long walks were always within the family. And so he saw that. Obviously, every time we were in Germany, he saw that, okay, that's a thing. So he just felt he wanted to do a multiple day walk. And he also did the Duke of Edinburgh. So he thought it would be a good idea to walk from our home here in London all the way up to Glasgow, which is doable. And he's like, if I, you know, and I'm like, I come with you. And so he did a practice walk, and obviously we didn't get the chance. But so then I, on the second anniversary, I want to do something meaningful. So I didn't want to sit at home and go crazy on the second death anniversary, right? Because yeah. I didn't want to be overwhelmed. So I knew I need to do something.
Yeah.
And it had to be meaningful. So I knew I couldn't do it alone. So I called my brother. I said, this is what I would like to do. And before I even could finish the sentence, he's like, yeah, I'm in. And more people then came to that as well. So then my niece also then later on decided to join us for the whole walk. My sister also decided to join us by car so that she would take our luggage and everything. And friends would come in and out.
You walked from London to Glasgow?
Yeah.
How long did it take?
6 weeks.
And was that walk attached to you setting up your global fund?
Mm-hmm. So I established the Shahzada and Suleiman and Shahzada Dawood Foundation. And out of that, now we are in the process of creating a healing center for trauma and loss.
Where is that going to be?
In the Devon area. We are very keen on the Dartmoor Nature Reserve area.
Mm, that's beautiful.
A healing center for people who experience trauma and experienced loss and grief. Because I would have wanted a safe haven where I would go and just heal.
Mm.
And I couldn't really find it in Britain. I went to Germany for 8 weeks. I found it in Germany, but not here in Britain.
This would be a residential?
Yes, yes. So not a psychosomatic clinic, but more like a center. There will be doctors, there will be psychologists, there will be therapists, but it's not a clinic as such. It will be a place where you can come and just give everything away and like just be, and we will be looked after, and you're where you can just concentrate on yourself and heal.
And I know that when you lose somebody, people find it incredibly difficult to find anything to say to you or talk to you, and no one knows the language, and they say all kinds of wrong things and do
Yes.
Yeah. What I found fascinating, the amount of people who tell me, you know, I've never lost somebody, but I lost a dog. So I kind of know what you're going through. And I'm like, no, you don't.
I love dogs. I have a dog myself. But, you know, like, no, it's not the same.
But maybe for them it is. I don't know. But the most honest, I think, is when people say, I really don't know what to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's the most honest.
What's the most annoying thing people say, apart from, I know what it's like because of my dog? When people say things like, oh, it'll get better.
Yeah, there's a light on the tunnel and whatever. So there are quite a few stereotypical sentences where you're like, okay, yeah. Thank you for the Hallmark card, right? So it's like, but I do have to say that the majority of people, the vast majority of people, just, they were just there. And sometimes they would just come and just squeeze my hand.
Yeah.
And say nothing.
Yeah.
Because what is there to say? That were the most helpful kind of moments where they're just like, yeah, they were present. As in, like, they didn't tell me their story. They didn't tell me their grief. They didn't tell me somebody else's grief. They didn't just brabble something, right? They were just there.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else, but also nothing more. You don't have to fill that silence. You don't have to. Because there's nothing to fill it with.
So you're the clinic you're going to be building.
Mm. Yeah.
Have you found a property for it, or are you going to build it from scratch?
So we have shortlisted 3 properties now. Very beautiful ones. And we just need to renovate them. So the structure would be there. No, I don't want to. Because I think... all those three buildings, which is quite funny, so they're all really solid buildings, but they also need a little bit TLC, you know, yes, tender, yes, love and care.
Yes.
So they're a little bit broken, but not quite. Or no, not broken, because I don't think that I am broken, or like that people who struggle are broken. I think that's not a good way. But, you know, like, there are cracks.
Wounded a little.
They're wounded. Yeah, yes. Okay, thank you. Yes, that's a much better word. Yeah. There are cracks, there are little wounds, yeah. There are little, you know, bruises somewhere. Yeah. And you just need to, you know, it just needs a little bit of care. And I think bringing a building into that story as well, and the area as well, right? It's like, because healing, yes, you have to heal yourself. But I think it needs more... It needs people to help you or be with you in order for you to heal. And because being alone is... You won't be able to heal all alone.
No.
We are herd animals, right? We do crave companionship. We do crave social contact, especially in these kind of times and what that looked like. And so I want... that center to be a part of the community, and I wanted being healed by a community so that it can give its energy back to the people.
How many people will it be able to take?
At the moment we are aiming for 30. So we're just starting because the proceeds of the book will also go to it. And so we're just starting with that. Because we're in the earlier stages. Like, we worked out our proof of concept and everything, but it's gonna be a bit of time until it's up and running.
You were a very big, you know, you got a very various, you know, very big jobs. Are you carrying on with those? Are you cutting back on your professional life to do this more?
I have cut back to concentrate now on purposeful. Projects like the healing center, because I just I had a lot of angels in my life. I had a lot of people who came and helped me, so I want to give back.
Oh, what a wonderful place to end. Christine Darwood, thank you so much for coming on Radio Oldie.
Thank you.
You've been listening to me, Charlotte Metcalf, in conversation with Christine Darwood. If you've enjoyed listening to this conversation and would like to hear more like this, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk, where you'll also be able to subscribe to the magazine. Meanwhile, my very, very warm thanks to you, Christine, for coming on Radio Oldie, to Bailey Gifford for sponsoring us, and to you for listening. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Oldie magazine for just £1? I'm sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial.